Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning. Welcome in. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to 106.7 The Fan on this Friday. June is 26 days old in 2020. Danny, how are we?
Doing all right, my friend. Got a weekend schedule now. We know what we're doing. I'm with a gentleman named Johnny Cakes Allville, who just finished his work week. I guess he didn't because he's got to work with me on Sunday from 12 to 3. I think you're doing a 9 a.m. on Sunday. Is that correct?
That's right. Pete Medhurst and myself, 9 a.m. to noon on Sunday. Back in the saddle. I prefer the morning shift. I don't know how you feel about the afternoon shift. But your boy, for a lot of reasons, prefers the morning shift. It's less chaotic around the house. Normally, that's like the baby's calmest, best time. But also, you get done at noon, and then you get the rest of your day. So Pete and I will knock it out, and we'll be good to go about 12 o'clock so that I've got my Sunday. It'll be a back-to-back this weekend in NASCAR with a couple of races in the Poconos. So that's what's on the docket for your boy. Might have to make a trip home, too. I might go get the baby in the pool at my parents' house at some point. So hot and gross out. That's about the
it's
only thing
gross,
that you can do outside that isn't awful.
So I having done now one of the mornings, you're right, the morning on the weekend is better. When it's 12 to 3, you don't have enough time to go anywhere before, and it sort of takes up more of your day than you would like it to. The reason I initially asked for that 12 to 3, if I said, hey, if it's a choice, I'll do this one, is that's during the nap for the youngest.
Strategic. Right?
So I thought it might be a little bit easier. But now, knowing what I know, it's not easier. I thought, again, this, by the way, is basically what my marriage is. Me, like daring to, like, stick up, get my finger wet and sticking it up in the air, thinking I figure out which way the wind's coming from, and going, I'm going to try to help. And I make it worse. That's what I do. I make it worse. And the double-edged sword of if you don't try for any reason, whether it's laziness and selfishness, which is always something that is a factor, but it's also like I'm afraid of messing up. I'd rather not mess up because the scolding I get from messing up sucks. The scolding I get from not trying sucks. I'm basically walking a tightrope to try to figure out what I'm supposed to be doing. And the number of times, it happens probably four or five times a day where I go, here's effort I made. Approve of my effort. And it's like, this was wrong, this was wrong, this was wrong, and this was wrong. You may as well have just stubbed your toe. You may as well just hit yourself in the shin with a hammer.
You're probably better off sometimes not even trying, you know, where you make a lot of effort and you just seemingly make it worse or whatever. And I think a lot of times after the fact, I know I look back and I well, if I didn't do anything, if I didn't try to make anybody happy or to please anybody, I probably would have just been better off.
You would have gotten yelled at, right?
Possibly. You mentioned your marriage, so this seems like a good time to tell you this. You were both in my dream last night, you and your wife.
Go on.
Yeah, how weird is that?
10:06 a.m., let's get into it. Let's do it.
I think I have to finish that story, right? I can't just leave it there and then we move on and say, meanwhile, in sports.
Yeah, yada, yada, yada.
Right. So, weirdest bit ever. I don't really know how or why. I was the listener who assumes that we're always together, okay?
Yep.
I was that guy in my dream. I can't tell, based on the details that I have, if we were vacationing together as families.
normally.
Me and my wife, you and your wife, all the kids, or if you guys were just at the same beach at the same time as us, and you, like, came over to the house we were staying at. So I don't have enough information to give you those details, okay?
Okay.
Here's what I know. We were on a vacation, my family, your family, at the beach, and you had, this is the wacky.
Okay.
You had grown your hair out.
Yep.
So that it was now very curly and thick and very long in a ponytail.
Well, now and we know it's like a dream. There's just no way.
There's no way, right?
I
but it was like
curl.
A Danny McBride. I'm trying to think of what movie he would have been in, but you basically looked exactly like Danny McBride. And right. It was almost as if you were being played by Danny McBride, but it was supposed to be Danny Rouillet. Does that make any sense?
It does. It does to me.
Okay. So you have this really long, thick hair. And it looks like a brown version of, like, all of the guys who signed all of the important documents back in the day when they wore those white wigs.
Uh-huh.
Are you tracking at all what I'm saying?
So far I'm with you. Because this just tells you how unrealistic that is. Because, again, if my hair is longer than a millimeter, it does this terrible flop-down bowl nonsense. Like, it looks horrendous when my hair is
I like
horrendous.
That is your big takeaway from how weird this dream is so far,
right.
Is that the details on your hair aren't quite right.
Well, that's how you know. But, like, you're going to hold me responsible for this, and I'm telling you, it's not realistic. Go ahead.
It can't happen. So your wife just decides that I'm right and we need to cut your hair. Because I've been trying to get you to cut your hair for, like, I guess an extended period of time whenever this dream picks up. Weird, by the way, that your hair is now part of my dream, right? And so your wife's like, I agree, Grant. You know, you should just convince him. And so basically you decide that it's okay if I shave your head. So we go out onto the deck, and you have to do it. You don't trust me, so you do the first couple pass-throughs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
you go all the way down to, like, bald head. Like, in a way that's not possible. You take, like, a clipper with guard, and you just make one pass-through, and it's like you just bicked it like you're Pete Medhurst, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all like, oh, my gosh, you weren't supposed to do that. And now I have to finish it. But for some reason, it's extremely painful for you every time I do a pass-through because you have, like, sunburn on top of your head. It's a very weird dream.
Sure.
We'd have to go to a dream doctor so that we can diagnose exactly what all of that meant. But, yeah, you and your wife were both there. Your kids were running around. The president was hanging out with them, and we were shaving your head on the back deck.
So yesterday I just referenced – you know what? I don't mean to jump past that. That's something. That is something. Again, I always wonder what these things represent. I think people that try to tell you that they understand dreams, you don't, where they go, this symbolizes that. How do you know that? You don't know that. You weren't there. You weren't in the dream, bro. You don't know that maybe you hate everybody's long hair. And because you don't like my hair, maybe I took on that persona. I don't know. No one knows anything about that kind of stuff. But that is weird. I think it's flattering when you dream about somebody. I do. I think it's flattering. I think it's really, really neat. It's like I'm on your mind in some way. I think that's good.
Here's what I don't know, though. I'm wondering, because I always, like, wake up the first time and then go back to sleep. I'm like, okay, let me check my – and it's like my normal time where if we were working in the studio or whatever, I've got to get up. I got to get the day started. I got to get out of the house. Well, I go back to sleep for, like, 30 more minutes, and I'm pretty sure that's when I had this dream because it's so fresh on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like you wake up, you think – okay, I got to get ready for the show. What are we going to talk about today? Like, whatever, for a few minutes. And then you go back to sleep. And maybe that's why you were front of mind. I don't know.
Because
I got to be honest, it's not that common that you're in my dreams. But this was very – and I can remember it. Like, there are times where I have dreams. Or, like, a few weeks ago, I was cracking up in my dream. Like, apparently just laughing hysterically. And my wife, like, shakes me and wakes me up. And she's like, what are you laughing about? And I'm like, what? She's like, you're in your dream. You're cracking up. And I had no idea what was funny. I just couldn't think about what I was dreaming about. But in this case, I remember the details extremely specifically. It's weird how that happens. Dreams are weird, man.
It's weird, man. There are countless examples. My wife is sometimes talk and laugh or, like, express emotions in dreams. Or, like, sometimes it's that, like, semi-sleep state when she's on her way, but, like, she's totally not with it. Well, like, I remember one time, like, we were just the way we were laying, that we were facing each other, right? And I was 99% asleep. She was asleep. And then she just goes, funny. And I'm like, what? What the hell is going on? Like, That better be my joke in your dream.
Right.
Don't tell me there's some other funny guy, because I could easily be replaced. There are plenty of upgrades out there. But I also thought of this. This is totally apropos of nothing. Yesterday we had a Zoom call right after the show, just to kind of catch up, talk about a few things. And I noticed something, that the president was drinking milk out of a sippy cup, right?
Right.
And I was very impressed by that. She's obviously much younger than the members of my brood, okay? So again, this is an example of me thinking I'm helping. I saw her up there, you know, I'm going, hey, here's some information I saw. This is interesting. I thought this was kind of cool, right? Sharing it with my wife. Basically saying, because we're still eyeball deep in bottles. We use the bottles. Our little toddler loves the bottle. That sounds like a weird thing to say, but he is a bottle kid. It comforts him. It calms him. He likes it an awful lot. That's his milk conveyance system. He wants the bottle. And so I go, you know, it's interesting. I saw the president with their Social Security, with their secret service detail, drinking right. milk out of a sippy cup. And I was like, I wonder. I thought that was, you know, because we had done this a little bit later with our oldest, and I was like, maybe that's something we could do to make our life easier. So the washing the bottles is such a pain in the butt, and you know, all this kind of stuff.
Washing the bottles is terrible.
You would have thought that I was like, you know, what we should do is just you know, move into a yurt in the middle of the desert and try to survive off cactus. You would have thought I basically said, let's sell our organs for blood money. It apparently was the dumbest suggestion anyone has ever made in the history of mankind, and I just sort of slinked away in absolute horrified shame.
The timing, it's like there's a lot going on maybe, so in her mind, yeah. She's thinking, now let's add this to our plate, really, right now? That's when you want to discuss this?
Yeah, because I'm literally going, here's something that I think might make the world easier if we do this. Is this easier? And again, you would have thought I insulted everything that anyone holds dear. Oh my God, it was so ridiculous. And I was like, all right, I'll go hang up by myself and maybe speak when spoken to. I'll make sure not to address what I think is a problem from here on out.
The cleaning of the bottles, by the way, is a top five annoyance or frustration of like the first year, isn't it? I mean, it's a lot of work.
It's awful. We're still doing this, the sanitizing bit and the whole nine yards. It's a terrible process. And I'm going, would it be easier if this process didn't exist? Nope. Wrong. Stupid. Shut up.
Well, I'm just glad that you don't have long hair down to your past your shoulders anymore. It was pretty amazing seeing you look like Danny McBride. We're Grant and Danny, so it was a weird night for me and a weird day for Danny, but we got that out of the way. We'll get the show going next here on 106.7 The Fan. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. At some point today, I want to talk about, and I'll explain why when we do it, but something that you were really into years ago that you look back and kind of roll your eyes at now. Maybe it's a time hop Facebook situation where, like, 10 years ago today, and it's your status, and it's a song you were listening to, or a movie that you were into, whatever it was, but you look back and you kind of go, yeah. But I have a backstory on that, and we can get into that at some point on G&D on this Friday. We appreciate you guys listening, as always. Means a lot. I'm in my home as we continue our shows from our houses in Virginia. Danny is in the laundry room in D.C., although we found out yesterday that Danny's laundry room also is kind of like his bathroom. I think there's a door to the toilet, probably to close it off. But
you
sit like 3 feet away from, you can reach right now out and put the toilet seat up, essentially, where you're sitting.
Yes, and so we learned this, or you guys learned this, when Thami and Dar had to stay home. Remember, there was like a scare at work, and they had to produce the show from home, and they were on the Zoom call, and they were like, pretty sure Danny just used the restroom, like, just now. Like, how could we have heard that? And I said, well, here's how. And I turned the camera, and I was like, yep, there's the toilet. It's a weird room, man. So the owners of the house, the room used to end pretty much right where I'm sitting, okay? Like, that's where the house ended, when they sort of built out this addition and added some storage space and this kind of weird closet. So they turned this half bath into also the laundry room, right? So they put the washer dryer unit with the big sink basin thing to my left, and then there is a shower and a toilet and sink right here to my right. So it's a weird little room to be in. It's we chose it to do the radio program because it's got the most doors and it's the hardest for my kids to reach to interrupt and disrupt and ruin the show. So it's kind of where we did it. The couple days I did it from like my comfortable basement couch that apparently caused chaos upstairs because they could hear me. And especially my youngest was like, let's go down and see what's going on. I hear this idiot projecting and talking. I want to go, you know, mess with him. And that made it harder on everybody. So I had to kind of go back into the isolation booth.
Well, it's a great setup, I would say. It's better than any studio that we've ever been in. There's no
doubt.
Just like my basement sitting on my recliner is. But whenever this isolation period, quarantine, whatever people are calling it, the pandemic started, it was so nice outside. You may remember, I would just go sit outside. And if I could block myself from the sun, if I had arrows to blot out the sun, I could still go out there and do that. I know EB does his show outside occasionally on his like back patio or whatever he's got. But I've just got, you know, the little patio back there, but I would just get cooked. So I looked it up this morning, just like taking a shot in the dark thinking, well, maybe it'll be decent today. And, of course, it's supposed to be 88 degrees while we're on the air with like 50% humidity or something absurd. Mm-hmm. So there's no sitting outside and the equipment just gets super hot and it wouldn't work. But I would love to be able to get outside at some point again and do one of these shows. But I've done that occasionally on the Sunday mornings with Pete. I'll go outside because at 9 or 10, it's not hot yet. By noon, I'm back inside. But it does. It changes your mindset a little bit. It sounds better, I think, out there. Get a little ambient noise. You get a little birds chirping. It's kind of cool. So, I don't know. If we get a decent day or some overcast, like non-rainy day, I might do that at some point. I just saw this, though. I want to pass this along to you. Uh-huh. Robert Griffin apparently said that he will one day write a book, quote, and tell everybody what they want to know about what happened in Washington, end quote. But now is not the time. He would prefer to look forward. So I guess writing a book in the future is what he's looking forward to, among, you know, other things playing his career. I've always had a good personal relationship with him. He was always very kind, I thought, and nice and accessible. And for a star, and he was a superstar at one point, he was extremely accessible in a way that they normally aren't. You know, maybe even too much so, as I've said on the air occasionally. You know, he did get bothered if people said negative things about him. And you know, if you critiqued him sometimes, I think only once or so did I ever kind of get a text. But I know a couple of guys would get, you know, feedback from him with something he didn't like. And you know, I just don't think guys like Aaron Rodgers or, you know, Lamar Jackson are probably doing that. But that was, he was young and he was kind of on top of the world. I'm sure he's matured a little bit since. But I ask you this, Danny. If he writes a book, you know, we've gotten a lot of intel now over the years from Mike Shanahan on his side of that story, one interview after another, many of them right here on this show. He's come out with anecdotes or things that may have happened or we thought about doing or here's why this went off the rails. We haven't heard a lot from Robert Griffin necessarily on what happened. Is that a book you'd want to read?
100%. 100%. And what you'll get are, you know, the tough guys, you go, it's over, move on. You're more than welcome to. I want every detail. I want everything. I want every single moment, blow by blow. Here's what I would watch. Here's what I would watch. If there was audio, I'd watch security camera footage of what went on, of every Ashburn office that have to do with the Redskins. In from basically the moment the trade was proposed, the idea that this could happen, from that moment until the end of whenever he was gone. I would watch every second of that, just hoping to find a detail. I'd be like the forensic team that's got to pour over thousands of hours of security footage to figure out what went wrong. Every single second of that is captivating to me. I am so fascinated to know. So 100%. Now, you know, I know I won't be satisfied after I read it, but the idea that I might get a new piece of information that has to do with that unbelievable era. That this is one of the weirdest and craziest tragic sports arcs in the history of not only DC, but in all of sports. There was no more popular figure than Robert Griffin in 2012. There was no more vilified figure than Robert Griffin 2 years later. Just just all of that is captivating and must-see television as far as I'm concerned. So, yes, of course I would read it. And then I'd end up annoyed because I would say it's slanted, it's one-sided. You mean the guy that wrote the book that came out as the good guy and it was nothing but a victim? But, yeah, I would. Of course I would read that.
So I would, too, And I think I would – maybe it's a little bit different, right? Because for you, you were on the air during that time, and you've had to spend, I mean, hours and hours of your life.
Oh, yeah.
And that's literal talking about this. So, of course, you want to know now the other side of this story, or at least as Griffin's going to tell it, in the same way that at that time in my life I was covering the team. I mean, my job at one point in time was to try to find out whatever he's going to divulge years and years later, at least from his side of it. So obviously I would read it and I'd be interested. I think, though, the longer you wait, the less juice there's going to be to that squeeze. Like, the less people, I won't say will care, but that's probably what it is, really.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, in the sense that when he was leaving here, there was a major hunger to find out what was going on. And with each passing year, I think that goes away a little bit. And in our society, everything is about right now. You think about, like, the Houston Astros scandal. The biggest deal in baseball in the world was we get to boo them and hit them with pitches. And then the pandemic hit, and there was a fight over money, and here baseball's coming back, and I haven't heard anybody really talking about getting even with the Houston Astros. We just kind of move on. You know, we all kind of gather around something and scream at the top of our lungs, and then someone from off in the distance goes, over here. And we go and we scream at that thing at the top of our lungs. And then someone says, look over there. And we just keep kind of running. And I think that the Griffin story, while yes, it was big enough that people will always be interested. If there's a 30 for 30, the ratings in D.C. would be great. I wonder how many people would really like stand in line and look forward and count down to going to get that book if it's years and years later. But we can open up the phones. I mean, how interested would you be? How invested would you be in reading a quote-unquote tell-all from Robert Griffin about his time with the Redskins? Because 2012 is still, for a lot of people my age, probably the best Redskins season or one of the most fun times as a Redskins fan you've ever had. So you get that nostalgia, you get to reminisce, and you get to find out, at least from the player's side, what happened. 800-636-1067. You can tweet us at Grant H. Paulson and at Funny Danny. In a half hour, Mel Antonin, who covers baseball on television for Masson and on MassonSports.com. He's a longtime buddy of mine I've done a lot of radio with at SiriusXM. Danny, he got really sick within the last year and was battling a liver issue and then got COVID-19 and was in the hospital for weeks. He's got an amazing story he's written about, and we can talk to him about that when he joins us coming up at 11 o'clock. You're listening to Grant and Danny. We'd mentioned that Robert Griffin said yesterday that he wants to ultimately write a book and plans on writing a book about what happened in Washington. He's not going to do it anytime soon. He is, you know, working on trying to further his career and get back to being a starter. And so the question we've got for you guys is that a book you would want to read? You know, many of you spent time calling into this radio station and one way or the other discussing this story for years. I would certainly read it. Danny would. I just think that maybe from a fan base standpoint, the longer he waits, the less energy there would be for it. But I think if there's a podcast that comes out where he tells an hour-long story about it, if there's a TV show on ESPN 30 for 30 style, if there is a book, whenever it comes out, there's going to be a lot of interest and people in D.C. will care. Our buddy Guylo said, I'd wait for the Cliff Notes. I listened to his interview yesterday. He did an interview with ESPN's John Kahn. Said the amount of finger-pointing without taking a lot of the blame himself was off-putting to me. The media coaches, owner, and players were his downfall. He was just around BS. That's what Guylo said about the interview. But people are chiming in saying they would want to read the book, and that doesn't surprise me at all. How could you not want more information on one of the most turbulent and amazing and fun, short-lived, times in team history? I mean, the chanting of RG3 in training camp, that seven-game winning streak to get to the playoffs, it all kind of came to an end in that playoff loss against Seattle as he collapsed to the ground at FedEx Field. No Fear says, I would be very intrigued in a book or a show about Griffin and the Redskins. I would just wonder how much of it would be truth. I mean, that's always the case when you get
half of the story, right?
You could say the same about, as much as I respect and like Mike Shanahan or Kyle Shanahan, I mean, you're only going to get a side of the story whenever anybody talks and you kind of piece it all together. He says, what would they keep out? I don't know who they is, but it's not like the Redskins would have to agree to let him write this. So I don't think anything would be kept out.
Right. I mean, the of course, it's a one-sided version. The same way when Mike Shanahan apparently never made a single decision over his entire career as the Redskins, lead executive, would be a perspective. Or I'm sure Bruce Allen would have a version where he wasn't at fault. Or same with Dan Snyder, etc. This is what you do, as you correctly said, is you get the details, you get that person's viewpoint, and for me, I'm just hoping for the morsels that fill in some of the gaps, right? We think we kind of have the beats, right? We think we sort of know this event happened, then this event happened, then he drew the unacceptable players on the whiteboard, then Mike Shanahan didn't visit him in at the hospital, which was apparently a big deal. You know what I mean? Like some of the stuff we know whose fault. We think we kind of have a Sherlock Holmes style detective chronicling of this thing. All I'm looking for is a couple anecdotes, a couple stories, a couple conversations that we didn't know existed, right? I'm a grown up. I can understand. I've got my preconceived notions and kind of my general idea of who I blame. And it's everybody, by the way. Everybody needs to wear this, how badly it went after how great it went, the poisoning of the water, so to speak. But I just want those new morsels, those new nuggets, those new things that I don't know. And I'm voracious for it. So whenever he writes it, I'll read it. I mean, that time, 2012 through 2014, is the most 30 for 30 ready documentary. I mean, there's a starter kit right there. You know what I mean? Just get five interviews and it's done. It's the pre-production's already over. It couldn't be more fodder for that kind of a storytelling.
Nick on Twitter, this is good, who I guess is ready for that 30 for 30 that Danny says is to be made already. He says, so much of what Robert Griffin does is annoying with how almost everything he does ties back to the brand that he has for himself. He says, but I can't look away. I'd consider the book. I can imagine the chapters being labeled to his slogans. Hashtag no pressure, no diamonds.
That's right. Chapter one.
You can definitely see that. You know, like, catch your – what was his sock say on draft night? Like, go get your dream, catch your dreams or whatever. But each one could be, you know, a different slogan from no pressure, no diamonds from his time. But, yeah, I would read the book. Call me a sucker if you want. I know it's a little bit different because, like I said, I was – covering the team at that time, so, but I still feel like I need some closure on how all that went down from his standpoint.
Yeah, so you could do something.
Side.
You could do something that'd be really cool that most of us couldn't do. Your perspective, I think, would be you and a handful of folks that were in that media room. You could go, here's why that isn't true, right? You would know something if something was just slanted or, you know, just sort of tried to craft where it didn't go down in that exact way. Or here's what I heard that was different from that. You know what I mean? I think that would be an amazing experience to have. And it's unique for you and, again, the handful of media folks that were covering the team at that time.
I think we remember the 2012 season a little bit different than it was, too, right? Because we think of it as one of the more incredible years in Redskins history, and it was. But that can be synonymous with outstanding, and it wasn't necessarily that. I mean, they were 3-6. They had lost three straight games after they got blown out by the Carolina Panthers in what was that first homecoming game where D'Angelo Williams was so mad that they called it homecoming when the Panthers were in town. And that's when Mike Shanahan, during the Week 10 bye week, you know, going into that week off, said we're going to be evaluating our roster. And he, I don't want to say punted on the season with that quote, but his point was, we're done. We're 3-6. And so they come out the next week and they destroy after a bye week. And Shanahan's teams throughout his resume are unbelievable after bye week. So they pummel the Eagles 31-6. Then they go to Dallas. And that was the signature Griffin game that year, in my opinion. He had great moments like his run against the Vikings in October, but he threw four touchdowns in a second quarter reminiscent of the Doug Williams Redskins Super Bowl second quarter. And the Redskins win 38-31, got a big kick late in that game that put them up 10 points. And you thought right then and there, you said, okay, Forbath hits this field goal. It's a 10-point game. They're going to win. And sure enough, they hung on, and they did, at Dallas on Thanksgiving Day.
Amazing.
So then they have a really ugly win, defensive struggle against the Giants back at home in primetime, 17-16. And they were back to 500 with four games to go. The streak, though, Danny, that 2012 stretch, I think people say Griffin won the Redskins the division, or really Alfred Morris was the guy, if you look back into December, with some Griffin and some Cousins sprinkled in. That Ravens game that kept the streak alive, they win in overtime to get to 7-6. Griffin got hurt. They were trailing in that game. That's when he originally hurt his knee.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With the Haloti-Ngata hit, Cousins came in, throws a touchdown pass to Pierre Garçon to tie the game. Then he sneaks in on a two-point conversion, down 2 points to send it to overtime. I think it was like a quarterback draw out of the gun spread. Really good call by Kyle. And then they got a great punt return. If memory serves, it was a random cornerback whose name is escaping me right now. I'll pull it in a second. It was a kid from TCU. It was like a seventh-round pick.
Oh, it's going to kill me. I know exactly what you're talking about. Oh,
I'm thinking Richmond something, but it's not Richmond. I'll think of his name in a second. So they get the big punt return against the Ravens. And then the next week, Cousins has to start against the Browns.
Richard Crawford?
Richard Crawford.
My man, Dick Crawford. That's right.
There you go. Dickie Crawford. Well done. So then they beat the Browns by 17. Cousins throws for more yards than any quarterback did that season. They win by 17 points. And it was as good an offensive performance. The offense looked different, right? It wasn't the read option. It wasn't run heavy. It was like balanced and downfield passing. And then they beat the Eagles 27-20 with Griffin back on the field. And then they beat the Cowboys to win the division with Alf going for 200 yards and 3 touchdowns. All to get to the playoffs. They needed all 7 of those wins, and they got them.
Every one of them, man. Every one of them. God, that was so much fun. So much fun. And the debates were endless, too, right, as you go back through that season. Remember, there were a number of things that happened. Griffin got concussed against Atlanta. Remember, he took that vicious hit. Vicious hit. I want to say it was a Witherspoon may have gotten him on a scramble or something like that. And I'm going, he's going to be out for weeks. Played the next week against Minnesota, a brilliant game where he had the highlight, right? The RG3 is going to outrace everybody, the Dick Stockton call right there. You had, the other moments, certainly, where the offense was anemic for a couple straight weeks against Pittsburgh and Carolina. They couldn't do anything, come back from the bye. It was amazing. And then when the injury happened against Baltimore and, he went back in for a minute, and then it was like, oh, my God, please get this guy out of the game. The controversy therein where the offense looks different in Cleveland with Kirk Cousins slinging it around. I mean, the whole thing, the dramatics, the excitement.
Don't
people
sleep
were paying
either, by the way,
such attention,
one.
Man.
When we didn't know anything about what the offense would look like in New Orleans, and they came out and hung 40 and 1-8 at the Saints.
People
no
underrate
really
that Garçon catch. Going across the middle, Garçon does this pirouette, catching a ball that's a little bit behind him, somehow athletically hits the ground and then is at full speed. Turns out he like broke his foot on that play and wasn't the same for months.
88 to the crib. I think that was his first. I think that was his first game with the Redskins too. He came that offseason.
Yeah,
they paid him like a number one, and everyone thought, "How are you giving this guy $40 million?" Right away, he showed, "No, he's worth every penny they're giving him." But they went from November 4th when they lost to the Panthers at home to fall to 3-6 to January 6th, 2 months later, with the home playoff loss to Seattle. They went 63 days without losing a game. While you and at that time, Holden, were on air every single day getting to talk about the Redskins. And for 60-plus straight days, they're playing every week, not losing a game. Just what an awesome time in D.C.
It was so fun,
we haven't
man.
Had many like it. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Top of the hour, Mel Antonin joins us. Covers baseball in town, who has dealt with COVID-19 and has a harrowing, amazing story to tell. So we'll chat with him coming up at the top of the hour.
It's morning.
He turns 40 today.
He's my age. Well, I'm only a handful of months older than Mike Vick. Michael Vick.
How about he was at Virginia Tech playing Florida State in the national championship game about 3 hours ago.
I know, right?
At 9 a.m. today, him and Virginia Tech were taking on Peter Warwick in Florida State. I played Madden, the prime of my Madden career. And for years and years, I was all about Madden. It's all I played. I was a Madden kid. I now have played a handful of times in the last several years just because, honestly, I don't know what it is, but I'm out of the video game market, I guess, largely. But Mike Vick, when he was with the Falcons, the cheat code that he was on Madden, I was that kid. Everyone played against one where they pick the Falcons and they run all over the place with Mike Vick and touch a button and he flicks the ball 70 yards downfield. And it's not fair and it's super annoying and it's ridiculous. That was me. Never stayed in the pocket. Never just took a 3-step drop and threw the football. I was going to run from sideline to sideline. I was going to run 15 yards behind the line of scrimmage before I threw it. The most annoying Mike Vick Madden kid that you can find, Danny, that was me at one point in time. And I tried to replicate that a few years later with Vince Young. Because Vince Young on Madden, people hibernate. He was a show. He was
really
so good because he was – I mean, he's coming out of college where at Texas he was unbelievable, that game against USC in the bowl game, and he can run all over the place and had a decent arm. Wasn't quite Vic, but kind of a poor man's level of it on Madden. But I was that kid hardcore. That was my team, the Titans and the Falcons before that on Madden. I would just run around and try to throw the ball off my back foot 65 yards with those guys.
The most dominant video game characters in sports history. Okay. So you've got a there have been other dominant video game characters. Obviously, it's like, you know, your hero becomes overpowered or something like that, or there's a cheat code or whatever. But just sticking with straight sports games. In my research, my advanced research on this, GP, I think number one is Vic. And I think it was the year he was on the cover or whatever it was. But just the ratings just were broken. It was unfair. For a guy that wasn't like a 60% passer, they made him perfect. You couldn't tackle him. You couldn't catch up to him. As you said, he could just flick his wrist and throw the ball a million yards, and the Falcons were unbeatable. Well, the Falcons those years were very beatable. They were like 8-8 type teams, right? He would have highlights. He'd have lowlights. But the video game version was unbelievable. Number two is Bo Jackson from Tecmo Bowl. And I think number three, and this is good, I might catch a little heat. I would argue Jeremy Roenick in NHL 94. I think those are your three guys that were the most dominant. Roenick, basically, if he touched you, you'd go flying, right? If you, on your Genesis, if you hit the C button with the right timing, which was the either the shoot button if you had the puck or the speed explosion kind of button, also kind of served as the checking, guys would go flying a million miles away. Every slap shot he took basically went in, and he could do the move, and you couldn't knock him off his feet. So Roenick was the best character in NHL 94 in a time where Gretzky was still playing, where Lemieux, Messier, and everybody else was still playing. They were incredible. Chicago, basically, we had to make a rule among my buddies. You couldn't play as the Blackhawks in NHL 94 because it was unfair. It was like playing an all-star team.
See, that's a couple of years before. I definitely played it after the fact. I had a cousin who had it, and we would play it a bunch. I was more of a Wayne Gretzky 3D hockey guy, if you're familiar at all with that game, which was amazing. Hockey video games have always been really, really good, like elevated above, I would say, even the popularity of the sport in real time. In the same way that soccer video games do that, FIFA and things now, I've thought FIFA as a game always bridged over into people that might not even watch soccer. I know friends of mine who got into soccer and learned rosters and teams.
That's your gateway, dude. Yeah.
Through playing FIFA. And I think hockey games for many, many years, it's just cool on ice and there's fights and different things that I think make the games work. But that, to me, the first game I played was the Gretzky 3D hockey. That's a good call, though, on Roenick. I remember how good he was. But I think if you're not telling me that Vince Young in Madden is in your top five, I think this is what you're doing.
Danny, wake up, buddy.
What's wrong?
Wake up, man.
Dude, there's never been a bigger discrepancy between how much better someone is in a video game and how good they were in real life. And like you said, you didn't say anything wrong. You said basically that they made Vic perfect in a way that he obviously wasn't that good in real life. But you understand how it happens. And with the same thing with Vince Young, from a sheer just attributes standpoint, what they're doing for these video games is they're going through and they're going, okay, let's grade this guy's speed. Well, on a 20-80 scouting scale, Michael Vick, particularly at the quarterback position, has 80 speed. Okay, let's grade this guy's arm strength. Well, we're giving him an 80 arm strength, so he's going to be a 95 out of 100 on arm strength. He's going to be a 98 on speed or whatever. So if you have enough of those physical tools, you think baseball, where it's power and the hit for average and the glove and the on-base ability to run with speed and all those things, if all those things are 70s, in a video game, you're going to be absolutely untouchable. You're going to homer every time and make every catch. That was Michael Vick. His physical tools were probably unrivaled all time at that position. Has anyone ever been faster and more athletic and had a better arm? Like as a left-hander, too. You think of left-handers, I think of Mark Brunell kind of crow-hopping his way into 27-yard throws.
Soft-tossing with touch, you know? Yeah, Ken Stabler.
Like efforting balls into small windows. Mike Vick could stand – he could sit on his butt and throw the tightest spiral 27 yards downfield into the waiting arms of a guy with no separation. I mean, he had such a rocket.
His arm strength was just absurd. So I think I'm going to go, and this is a shout out to Brendan Dar and RIP NCAA football. Reggie Bush in NCAA football in the mid 2000s, because right off his Heisman campaign, where he had like 2,000 yards rushing, 1,000 yards receiving. Just you couldn't touch him. You could not tackle that dude. He was incredible. And people are telling me from the NBA 2K game. So this is after my sports game hiatus. But like a Steph Curry who would never miss, or like a LeBron James with the difficulty turned down in some of the 2K games, I would throw out there. But yeah, I think Vince Young is a good one. What about Ken Griffey Jr. in Ken Griffey Jr.'s baseball game?
Of course.
I think if you were on it. Yeah, like Tiger Woods in the Tiger Woods games. Like, if you're on that, then you're going to be – you'll make yourself pretty good.
Weirdly, with his name on the cover, Griffey did seem to homer a lot in that game. But he same sure kind of deal as Mike Vick. From a tools standpoint, if that's how you're building the players, if you're just ranking a bunch of attributes, that guy should be unbelievable. Because there's no attribute that isn't below a 90 out of a 100. Now, in real life, you got some flaws and you're going to swing and miss occasionally. But – he is built, like Vic was, as the perfect video game character. Grant and Danny on the Fan, Mel Antonin, who you guys have seen for many years on Masson TV, MassonSports.com as well, writing about baseball, wrote for the USA Today for many, many years. He'll join us next to talk about dealing with COVID-19, which has pummeled him for weeks, but he has come out on the other side, and we'll chat with him next. Guys, Grant Paulson from my friends at Lindsay Chevrolet. I told you, I just went over there last week and bought myself a new ride. It was a used vehicle we wanted off their lot, and so with my lease coming up, that's exactly what we did. Got myself a Buick Regal. It's a good-looking car. I don't get to drive it as much right now as I would like because of the pandemic. Car's just mostly sitting at the house, but hey, that's not anything that you or me can do anything about. But my friends at Lindsay have some amazing offers right now. New Camaro Malibu and Trax up to $8,000 off. Equinox Blazer Traverse, $8,000 off. Tahoe Suburban up to $9,000 off. If you're a qualified buyer, you can get 0% financing for 72 months. You're making no payments for 120 days. Lindsay is going to save you more. Lindsay Chevrolet, they've got over 1,000 vehicles to choose from. The GM is Paul Smith. He's a good buddy of mine. If you go into the office, ask for him. If you're just calling, you don't want to go in, I understand that too. They will let you test drive from your house right now. I love it at Lindsay. You will as well.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.